Shrink Wrap Radio number 36, May 21st, 2006, An Irish Odyssey.
And now it's time for Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap.
Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
When I was a young man, I thought I knew it all, and I was willing to go out to, as a priest to explain this dogma of Catholicism.
Yes, right.
And I was convinced that that was the way things were.
Sure.
You know? But I began to realise that it wasn't quite as... There were cracks in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we found that in Ireland with all of the scandals of child abuse, and we were living a sort of a facade,
yes,
you know, a false impression that there was a dark underbelly to this beautiful fixed notion of reality.
That's the voice of Shrink Wrap Radio listener Hugh Gormley, who I met for the first time on my recent trip to Ireland. Hugh and I got together my first evening there, and we had a delightful chat in a hotel lobby. He had been working at his job installing computer networks in Northern Ireland. Traffic was bad, and by the time he got down to Dublin to meet with me, it was already 10:30 at night. You'll hear the lobby noise in the background, but given the conditions, the sound's not too bad. Hugh grew up in Northern Ireland in the midst of the Troubles. However, he later moved to Dublin, and he now considers himself a Dubliner. He's had a long-standing interest both in psychology and matters of the spirit, as you will hear now. Okay, well, here I am in Dublin with Hugh Gormley, who I met through Shrink Wrap Radio, and we're sitting in the lobby of a hotel. I've forgotten the name.
O'Callaghan.
The O'Callaghan Hotel. So tell me a little bit about how you discovered Shrink Wrap Radio and how we ended up being together here.
Yeah, okay, fine. Well, first of all, David, I'm delighted to meet you in person.
Likewise.
Having heard you on Shrink Wrap. How I first came to hear about Shrink Wrap, I'm a member of the Association of Transpersonal Psychology.
Yeah, you mentioned that in your email.
Mm. I'm on a mail list that Charles Tart sends around the world about the association.
Great.
So Charles mentioned to me via the mail that he was going to be interviewed by you on Shrink Wrap. So there was a link to Shrink Wrap.
Yeah, wonderful. He told me he was going to do that,
mm-hmm,
and I'm so glad he did. Yeah, I wasn't sure. Sometimes people say they're going to do things, they forget, but he was very, very kind.
Yeah, he did that. So I tuned in, and I listened to your interview, mm-hmm, with Charles, and obviously I really enjoyed the content.
Yeah, great, you know? Great.
So I decided then to... The Shrink Wrap asked me then, did you want to be signed up as a member? So I said, yeah, why not? So to my surprise then, you contacted me to say you were going to be in Dublin.
Right.
4 days later.
Well, you signed up on the map.
Yeah, that's correct.
The Frapper map.
Yeah, the Frapper
and,
map.
And so you didn't send me an email, but I went on that Frapper map and they show, you know, they show the name and the person's location. Mm. And I said, oh, good, somebody in Ireland. Mm. Well, that was great. So tell me how you came to be you know, you're not a psychologist and you're not, and yet somehow you're in the Transpersonal Association. Mm. How did you learn about this whole world?
Okay. In your introduction to your radio show, you talk about amateur psychologists.
Right.
You're broadcasting to a wide,
yeah.
a wide brief. Okay. I suppose my interest in psychology first began in the early 70s when I was a student.
Mm-hmm.
And I studied in a college in Dublin called All Hallows College, which may be known to many of your listeners. A lot of the All Hallows students went on to become Roman Catholic priests.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And was it your plan to be a priest?
It was. That was my intention.
Yeah.
As a young man, I felt that I had a vocation, a calling to
sure.
become a Roman Catholic priest.
Sure.
So I entered All Hallows in 1972, and as part of our training, we obviously study 2 years of psychology and philosophy. So that's how I first became interested
okay.
in psychology. Yeah. In 1977, I left the seminary, so I decided I didn't want to become a priest.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And I've been living in Dublin and working in Dublin more or less since 1978.
So you grew up in Northern Ireland, and you're probably intimately acquainted with what's called the Troubles.
Mm.
You know?
They seem to be coming to an end.
I'm so happy.
Yeah, so am I.
And, yeah, I'll bet.
And I think it's people are beginning to finally realize that violence does not achieve anything.
Mm-hmm.
That discussion, consensus, the political way.
Right.
Yeah, it works, you know.
Right. So how did you find out about the Association of Transpersonal Psychology?
Okay. When I left the seminary, I was looking for some work, some paid work, yeah. And I found it very difficult at that stage, despite the fact that I had been in a seminary for 5 years. When I went for interviews, people said, yeah, you're a nice guy, but what can you do?
Right.
In 2000, in the year 2000, I decided to go back to college to finish my degree. So I went back to All Hallows College, and I completed my BA degree.
Oh, in 2000?
Yes, just recently,
yeah,
in
yeah.
pastoral theology.
Yeah. yeah.
After that, I still had a thirst for expanding my knowledge. So I decided then to do a diploma in psychotherapy.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
yeah.
Because my intention eventually is to get out of this business, the day job,
yeah.
and hopefully to work as a counselor, a mentor, as a coach.
Oh,
so
good.
So in the evening time, I'm trying to build up my knowledge and my... Okay.
Excellent.
So my primary degree, pastoral theology, my diploma in psychotherapy...
I think that evolution from the church to an interest in counseling is, you know, that's not that's not such an unusual path.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I find, in some ways, this almost feels like a ministry to me doing this
mm-hmm.
this program.
Because
mm-hmm. I was originally, I was raised in a Protestant
okay.
environment,
mm-hmm.
but. You know, we would hear missionaries talk, and my workshop tomorrow, a lot of it's going to be about the call.
It's something that I've always been interested in. Where does the call come from?
Right.
And maybe you might be able to help me to come to terms with that particular
okay.
concept, right?
I thought maybe you were going to tell me right
okay,
now.
Okay, well, I'm happy to talk about it from my own point
yeah.
of view, yeah?
Yeah.
When people feel that they have a calling... or they're called to the church. Now, in when I was a young man, and maybe a little bit naive and a little bit more trusting, I tended to see that in purely in maybe spiritual terms,
mm-hmm.
and I felt that God was calling me personally.
Sure.
Just to perform a specific duty, okay?
Yes.
But I think now that I've reflected on it over the past maybe 27 years... I feel sometimes that people are drawn to certain vocations, be it counseling, maybe psychology,
mm-hmm.
mentoring,
mm-hmm.
or to be a minister of some type.
Yeah.
They could be called to that because of a need within themselves.
Oh, right. Definitely.
Okay, you know.
Definitely.
So we all want to be loved and accepted
yeah.
and understood.
Yes.
And perhaps sometimes... that a calling to, now I could be totally off the wall in this, but a calling to a particular vocation or a particular a career like that may involve some need in ourselves that's wanting to be met or fulfilled.
Definitely, definitely. And that's one of the reasons why it's often advised that people get psychotherapy or counseling for themselves before they go into the work, so that they're not just working out their issues on somebody else and engaging in a lot of projection. So that's certainly an element of it. Okay. I would agree with you.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. But I think, though, and I can't speak for training of Catholic priests now, but certainly over 30 years ago, I think that whole type of introspection or reflection on one's own, the reason why you had a calling, wasn't really dealt with. But the theology really consisted of textbooks written by eminent theologians like Joseph Ratzinger, the now Pope. And you learn these, but free thinking wasn't encouraged. If you were a free thinker, that you wouldn't make an ideal priest at that time.
Yes,
because
right.
they wanted someone to represent the official dogma or the, of the church. So I remember when we had our annual review with the president of the college, people would be censured for being a free thinker and criticized for that.
Yeah. So are you still Catholic? And if so, have you come to it in a different way than?
No, I wouldn't call myself Catholic today. No, I might become one of those free thinkers that I would have Catholic.
I was suspecting you might be a free thinker.
I might have a Catholic taste now in the secular sense of being broad church.
Right.
But since leaving seminary, and I've studied Buddhism and Hinduism and Sufism, and I've looked at all of those, and I've read a lot of books about different ways of expressing that religious desire within the human being.
Right.
And I, at this stage in my life, and I'm not speaking authoritatively, but I'm just speaking personally, I think that all ways are equally valid if they meet that need. And I've read a lot of Matthew Fox's work about ecumenism, deep ecumenism, and the wells of a religion are being fed by the ocean of the to speak about that transcendent or the other.
That's
really something. How do you, if you accept that there is another, something else greater than us here, how do you contact that, or how do you get in touch with that? And that would be something that I'm very interested in at the moment. How to touch the spiritual in the everyday. You mentioned earlier on about the call of the hero, or the hero's journey. I think every human being hopefully undertakes that journey. Every human being is a hero.
Exactly. That's really the substance of what I'll be teaching in this workshop. Is I think it's useful when we get in touch with that aspect of ourselves and we see ourselves in the light of a larger pattern. You mentioned you heard the show with the artist in Canada.
Yes.
She was drawing upon myth.
Yes.
And the myth of Persephone and Saint Ursula.
Yes.
As and able to kind of reposition the way that she saw herself, you know, having been a victim of sexual abuse and so on. But when it becomes depersonalized and you realize that you're part of a bigger picture, that you're acting out some kind of an archetypal play, I think it makes it more bearable and more exciting and more interesting.
Because there's a pain associated with the human condition.
Yeah.
You know, the pain of existence.
Yeah.
Maybe we're born in pain and we come into this world in pain, you know. How do we reconcile that pain? How do we,
that's a good point.
Maybe some people try to dull it with addictions or to various substances to dull that meeting of reality. Some people deal with it through retail therapy. People have different forms of escapisms to avoid confronting that themselves on that journey.
When you say retail therapy, you mean consumerism?
I do,
okay.
Well, people will shop till you drop.
And
Ireland, over the past 10 years in Ireland, we've been accustomed to they call it the Celtic Tiger. Our economy is booming.
Tremendous boom.
Yeah, people have more disposable income, and but maybe along the way a little bit, they've lost something mm-hmm. in that pursuit of materialism.
Yes.
You know, and it's to keeping a balance. We all right. need material. We can't live without food and something right. to lay our head right. and Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And,
yes.
You know, so we have to meet those, but I don't think they should be an end in themselves, the pursuit.
Definitely you know, not. So, coming back to the psychology part, tell me a little bit about the master's program you went through. What did they teach? What did you study?
This was in the psychotherapy program.
Yeah, right.
That was an interesting experience. It was over a 9-month period. Yeah.
Okay.
And it was pretty. We started off at the bottom, and mm-hmm. we looked at some of the major names in psychology. You know, we looked at Freud and Jung and, mm-hmm. and some of the behaviorists and different types. So it was a pretty basic introduction to psychology.
An overview
of mm-hmm. it, yeah. And I think it was probably written or intended for the amateur psychologist
right,
again.
Right.
It wasn't an in-depth academic study. But it skimmed along the surface.
Yes.
But it was a general introduction, really, to that whole. So I suppose it was a little teaser or a whetting of the appetite.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Okay.
You know. So I mean, I'd be very much. I wouldn't be an academic, but I'd be very much in the amateur, the interested layman.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. That would
and,
be worth
and
it.
I'm under the impression that here in Ireland, the barriers are not very high in terms of somebody becoming a counselor, in terms of licensing and so on.
Yeah,
I mean, in the U.S., there are all sorts of hoops one has to jump through in terms of training, oral exams, written exams, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't exist here, right?
It's pretty much an open market.
I've heard.
There are a few associations who are trying to set a standard, and I think that's a good thing. Because obviously, there's no point someone is putting up a notice on the door and saying counselor without having any basic training or even a little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Right.
And you talked earlier on about a person having to undergo a course of psychotherapy or some type of counseling themselves because you need that insight into your own motives.
Sure.
As I mentioned earlier, why you're undertaking this.
Yes.
And if people are going to trust you with their innermost thoughts and secrets of their soul, that's precious material.
Definitely.
And the person who is dealing with that has to have very high ethical standards, and they have to be very sensitive and to take that as a gift and without being too poetical about it, but it is a personal. You would like to think that if you're revealing innermost secrets, that the person who's accepting that isn't just doing it simply for a fee, but there is a level of professionalism and a level of competence.
Yes, exactly.
And the other thing you said to me earlier was that that if a person has problems, childhood problems, with behavioural problems, it may touch a nerve in the counsellor as well, and it may invoke those feelings and those difficulties.
It comes up.
Yeah, it comes up. And then they're not able to deal with the situation maybe objectively or what, you know. So
yes, And I should mention that Hugh is having tea and I'm having a Guinness. So he's going to be progressively more articulate and I'm going to be less and less articulate.
I wouldn't agree with that, David. You know?
Well, let's talk about music a little bit.
Okay.
I can always edit this, you know, and I don't know how much I'll use or how much of that loud Irish lady earlier. She may have obliterated a lot of it.
She sneezed a lot. But you needn't use any of it. I mean, like, it's whatever you feel free. I've given you my permission now. You can do what you want with it.
Wonderful. Okay. I'll turn it into a book and sell it for millions of dollars.
Copyright free. You don't have to give me any royalties, right. David, now. So there we go. I don't think anybody would be interested, but
so let's talk a little bit about music,
because
you're a guitar player. I want to be a guitar player. I see my own guitar playing and folk music ability happened while I was an undergraduate in college.
Okay.
And then it didn't progress much after that. Mm-hmm. Try as I might, it's been hard for me to incorporate any new songs into my repertoire. Mm-hmm. There was a critical period of imprinting there.
And then
that's it.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder, is that that's not unlike my own experience.
Really?
Because in the 60s, when I was a teenager, obviously every young a guy wanted a guitar, you know, wanted to be like Dylan or Woody Guthrie or
Woody Guthrie's my hero.
Yeah, yeah, you know, or the Beatles or something. Yeah. So that it was cool to have a guitar, you know. So we all picked up three chords and we belted out "The Times Are Changing" and, you know, "Cry Freedom."
Yeah.
And
there
was, but I think the music represented something to the baby boomers. It was some kind of a. Apart from being a cool thing to do, but it was an expression of freedom. We're becoming teenagers, young adults, you know?
Well, what you're triggering for me is, for me, it's related to the hero's journey.
Okay.
The folk songs were stories about people's lives.
Okay.
And boy, when I was singing a song about the miner, you know, the miner's life, dark as a dungeon, I felt like I knew that life. So those songs were doorways into authentic life patterns in a way that popular music doesn't give you that sort of a doorway.
They were authentic, they were a cry of the soul.
Exactly.
Or a cry of the heart. That's true. They weren't written for to sell albums.
That's right. And of course, just like mythology and fairy tales, some of them were quite old and polished. You know, by the re-singings the retelling, if you will. The folk process. I'm just making this up as I'm going along here.
Sounds good to me.
It's sounding better and better to me. In the same way that myth and fairy tale, you know, it's an oral tradition. And so in that way it bears this imprint of the collective unconscious. Okay. I never thought that before about folk music, but think folk music maybe has that quality.
Well, if you go back to the origins of folk music, maybe one has to do it within a specific culture, but there was a very interesting program that was developed by the Irish television channel RTE called Bringing It All Back Home. And they went to America and followed the folk traditions in the Appalachian Mountains, and they looked at how they were influenced by Irish immigrants.
Much of it came from Ireland, Scotland,
that's right,
England.
But if you go back, say to take the island of Ireland and trace the roots of those songs back to their origins in the lives of the people. Before we were a literate society and we wrote things down, the collective memory might have been told in epic poems or storytelling. And then some people would have sung or chanted, because it's also an aid to memory, isn't it?
Yeah, it's easier to remember.
Yeah,
right.
If you sing something. So to get back to that whole idea of memories, or memories of tribes or memories of a people, like it could have been transmitted from generation to generation via songs. And there was another interesting story I heard about an African tradition whereby whenever the mother was going to give birth to a child, she went out into the wilderness to listen for the song of the child. And she heard some rhythm or some music, and then she brought her husband and he learned the song as well. So as soon as the child was born, they began to sing this song to the child. And this song was special for this child, and that song was that child's song, and through the various initiation rites and stages in that child's life, the song was sung, and eventually it was sung at the death of the child. But that song accompanied the child.
Oh, wonderful!
Wasn't it beautiful?
Yes, I had never heard that before.
Yeah, they accompanied the child through the process of their lives. You know?
But of course, you're reminding me that that's another major tributary to American folk music was African music. The black slaves. And which has ended up enriching the whole world musically.
So there's a lot, there's music has a lot, the music of a people is more simply than rhythms or sounds. Maybe it carries with it some sort of a collective memory, or when you hear a piece of music, it can trigger childhood memories, you know. Nursery rhymes. How popular nursery rhymes are. The whole idea of nursery rhymes and archetypes and journeys and the Big Bad Wolf and Little Red Riding Hood and the Three Little Pigs and all of that. I think that's a fascinating study, you know. The princess and the prince and the hero are told and In the beginning, Once Upon a Time, it's set in some...
Yeah, we resonate when we to these things, and they really fit in that realm that we refer to as archetypal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which, as I'll be talking about in the workshop, the archetypes aren't specific images, but it's more as if they're containers, if you will, that are kind of ready-made and receptive to certain classes of experience or imagery.
Yeah, so I suppose those archetypes can be carried by different methods, maybe via story, via a nursery rhyme, via song. And when we hear a song that tells a tale of a young man setting out on a journey, he meets various challenges along the way, and then he meets maybe the girl of his dreams or the princess in the story, and they live happily ever after.
Yeah,
maybe we're yearning for all of that, but those of us who are maybe realist and pragmatic about various things, sometimes people don't live happily ever after. You know.
Yeah. Right.
And maybe this is where the hero has to dig deep to get the strength for the tough times as well as the good times.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of tales that don't end happily. The ones we remember are the ones that they say happily ever after. But I think there are a lot of stories out there maybe that. I know some of them can be pretty gruesome sometimes.
Can I ask you a question then about the hero's journey then?
Yeah.
And relating that to the every man or every woman, every human being is on this journey of life.
Right.
And in the course of our lives, we evolve through different stages and different initiation rites. And so the hero's journey, where do you think the journey ends?
Well, I think the journey is a cycle at one level.
Okay.
I think that there are lots of small journeys that we take in the course of our big journey.
Okay.
I was surprised when I interviewed Charles Tart that he got into reincarnation.
Okay.
I was not expecting him to go there.
Okay.
And I don't know where I'm at for myself with reincarnation. Okay, I think I mentioned that in that recording.
Yeah.
Because it's not something that I've had an intimation of. And all my friends who are into reincarnation, I'm sure you've heard this before, they're always somebody very famous, you know. They're always royalty.
We just went an ordinary Joe.
Where did all the ordinary Joes go?
So
I don't know about reincarnation. So where does it end? I mean, at some level it ends in a mystery.
Maybe never ends.
Well,
it's a never-ending story.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the myths seem to imply is that we're part of a great wheel, and the circle keeps going.
Well, the Hindu philosophy would see that the wheel of life, you know, that is continuously turning, and Shiva is dancing at the center of the wheel.
Yes.
And it's continuously destroying and rebirth. And it's
and of course, we know that now on a cosmological level, on an atomic level. I mean, we know that matter isn't destroyed. It's just matter becomes energy. Energy becomes matter.
Mm. The wave and the particle.
So, isn't it interesting that the Indians captured that so long ago? And to me, that's part of the excitement and the mystery is that those who've gone with empirical science and gone out as far as we've been able to go so far, and the mystics have gone way in, those two seem to meet.
Because one reads about more and more physicists and scientists beginning to look at the concept of mystery or chaos, whereas before it was all, we thought we knew it all maybe in the 18th, 19th, 20th centuries, that it was fixed.
Yes.
And that there wasn't this fluidity in life, you know?
Yeah. We thought it was like a very complicated Swiss watch.
Yeah.
And eventually we'd figure it all out.
Yeah. But you had heaven, and you had Earth, mm-hmm. and you had the underworld, mm-hmm. and that was it, you know, God is heaven and everything is right with the world, right. the world, you know.
Yeah.
But I think we're beginning to see that it is a bit more fluid and flexible. I suppose there's a comfort in fundamentalism, or no, if believing that everything is fixed. And,
I think,
you know,
that's the pull of fundamentalism, that it's, you were talking earlier about the pain of existence, mm-hmm. and part of the pain of existence is uncertainty, mm-hmm. and not knowing, mm-hmm. ultimately not mm-hmm. knowing. Mm-hmm. So I think fundamentalism is a shortcut to avoid those questions and that pain.
But isn't that a little bit like, it reminds me of a child, right, being comforted by their parents, mm-hmm. right, and they feel secure. I mean, the ultimate kind of comfort is in the womb, where everything is supplied. You've got warmth and comfort and food, and you don't really have to do anything about that. It's all taken care of. And as a child, then, your parents are aware of things like having to earn a living or provide somewhere to live. But the child is free to play in a world that maybe doesn't have to deal with those realities. Mm-hmm. But as a child, and one of the things we talk about shattering the myths of childhood, you know, that, or you think that your father or your mother are perfect.
Yes.
And wonderful.
Right,
and when
right.
you see them as being a flawed human being, mm-hmm. like yourself, that's a big issue.
Yes.
For a person to have to come to terms with.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
It is.
And then as you get older, I think you realize your own limitations, and you're, you know, when you're young, maybe you're full of optimism and full of hope and
things. Right.
And nothing is a problem.
Yeah.
We can do this, you know, we can go there. But I think you're accepting your own limitations and that. I'm not talking about fatalism there, really, but I think maybe it's maturity or just. Acknowledging, you know, mm-hmm. your own frailty.
Yes.
And people have difficulty with that sometimes, I think. Acknowledging, their, you know, that they don't know.
Yes, yeah.
You know, admitting that.
Right.
I don't know. I just don't know.
Right.
And it's very...
Sometimes I feel envious of people that have a strong sense of conviction that mm-hmm. they know. mm-hmm. Because it is tougher to be in a position where you're not totally sure.
Yeah. But when I was a young man, I thought I knew it all, and I was willing to go out as a priest to explain this dogma of Catholicism,
yes, right.
and I was convinced that that was the way things were.
Sure.
You know? But I began to realise that it wasn't quite as... There were cracks in it,
mm-hmm.
and I think we found that now in Ireland with all of the scandals of child abuse, and we were living a sort of a facade,
yes.
you know, a false impression that there was a dark underbelly to this beautiful fixed notion of reality.
And my hat's off to you collectively, because I think, you know, however you came to that, I think it takes courage, you know, to come to that place. It mm-hmm. takes courage, A, to admit the abuses of the past mm-hmm. and the arrogance of the past mm-hmm. and to open up to this to this less certain but more growthful, ultimately more growthful outlook, worldview.
Yeah, yeah.
But Ireland's a company. Ireland is a country with deep spiritual roots and traditions.
Yeah,
I mean, that go back, you know, pre-Christian, pre-Christian roots.
That's right. And I don't know if you've ever visited Newgrange.
Yes, somebody took me to Newgrange.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Go ahead, tell us a little bit about Newgrange.
That's a fascinating place, really.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know about it, it's a Neolithic site about 20 miles from Dublin,
mm-hmm.
but there's a passage which leads into a central chamber, and it's about I think it's about 4,000 years BC.
Yeah,
it's very old. And people, we still don't understand the purpose of it. But on the shortest day of the year, the sun shines down this chamber and lights up the inner chamber. And it was perfectly aligned to catch the rays of the rising sun on the 21st, 22nd of December.
Yeah, I just marvel. How did they know how to do that?
Mm.
And it's constructed with large, heavy stones.
That's correct, yeah. And even the stones didn't come from the area.
Oh, that's right.
They came from down south of Dublin, and they reckon some people, there's a view that they were transported up by sea up the east coast of Ireland, and then up the Boyne River to this site on the Boyne River, where the tomb was constructed. But there are several tombs in that vicinity. So it seemed that the people had a high culture mm-hmm. at that stage,
yes.
which seemed to have died out.
Yes.
And various other people came, and I'm not sure of who they were, but they were the Iron Age people and Bronze Age people came and used the site as well for other ritual purposes. Mm-hmm. But that original concept of catching the rays of the sun, it's fascinating, really.
It's like the Irish version of the pyramids, or then there are the Inca constructions and the Mayan constructions, you know, in South America.
Which are similar to Central America as well, by the way.
Yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah. So there are mysteries as we look back well as
Looking
we look forward.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this conversation with Hugh. Actually, at the point where the audio track leaves off, I suggested turning off the recorder. Of course, then we both felt a lot looser and the conversation got even better. One thing I recall from that part of the conversation that didn't get recorded is Hugh telling me how divided his family was during the Troubles when he was growing up in Northern Ireland, with at least one person in the family lining up with the IRA. Of course, that was a terribly wrenching situation for the family. Hugh and I really bonded in a short time, and I'm hoping that on a future trip to Ireland, I'll have a chance to hear him make music with family and friends, and maybe even join in. Speaking of bonding, I also made a wonderful new friend in Paul Moore, another Shrink Wrap radio listener who lives in County Carlow. Paul is not only raising a family and running a 40-person construction company, but he's also working on a master's degree in psychoanalysis through Trinity College in Dublin. And as part of that program, he's undergoing psychoanalysis twice a week, couch and all. Paul made me aware of a whole emerging area of psychoanalytic theory that I was previously unaware of. It's called neuropsychoanalysis. Evidently, there are faculty in the Department of Psychiatry at Trinity and elsewhere that are working on correlating various psychoanalytic ideas with actual brain structures. I wanted to interview Paul about this, but he didn't feel quite expert enough yet. I'll get him in the future, though. Paul attended the Hero's Journey workshop I conducted at the Chrysalis Retreat Center in the rolling hills of County Wicklow. Paul attended the weekend session in exchange for serving as my assistant and driving me around a bit. I'd like to give you a little feel for the workshop. Who knows, you might want to attend if I do it in Ireland again, or you might want to gather some friends and acquaintances together and bring me to your neck of the woods to put on a similar weekend. There were 10 women in the workshop. Paul and I were the only males. Plus, the level of sophistication ran the gamut, all the way from Paul, who's a graduate student and in analysis, to 4 or 5 of the women who signed up pretty much on a lark, having no idea what to expect. Add to this the fact that among the 10 women, we had a mother and daughter and a pair of sisters. So we had some people who were friends, some relatives, some strangers, and a real mix of psychological sophistication. This seemed like it might be a challenging mix. Friday evening, we did some icebreaker types of exercises, and then I lectured a bit on basic Jungian concepts. Saturday morning, I gave a PowerPoint presentation on Joseph Campbell's model of the journey of the hero. As part of this slideshow, I used tarot cards to illustrate the archetypal stages. I went into this knowing that in Ireland, there is a fairly widespread feeling that tarot cards are evil, so I needed to work carefully to detoxify this prejudice and introduce the participants to their use not as fortune-telling tools, but as a projective tool for getting in touch with archetypal themes. As we got into the late morning and early afternoon, we did several rounds of spreading the 72 cards face up in a circle around the room, and then having respondents find a card that represented the particular stage of the journey we were discussing at the time. They then wrote in their journals, silently dialoguing with the card they had chosen, later sharing what came up for them in pairs and in the larger group. The rest of the workshop, Saturday afternoon and evening, and Sunday morning and afternoon, was devoted to dream work and gestalt therapy group work. We were really starting to get quite a bit deeper into people's issues with the dream work and the gestalt work. I should mention, too, that we began each of our working sessions with 10 to 15 minutes of meditation. By the end of the workshop on Sunday afternoon, it seemed that everyone in the group had wrestled with some significant emotional material and experienced some sort of breakthrough. Needless to say, this was very gratifying for me. We all ended up on a high. After the workshop, Paul drove me down to Waterford. We had a great bonding experience on the ride down, rehashing parts of all that we had just experienced together. I spent the night at a B&B, met some nice Australian ladies there who gave me a lift to Cork in their car the next day. One of the things I wanted to do in Cork is visit the Blarney Castle, where people go to kiss the Blarney Stone. It turns out that kissing the Blarney Stone is more challenging than I expected. You have to lie on your back while some guys hold your legs down, as you can't lever out over space about 400 feet above the ground. True, there are some iron bars there, which you might not fall through, but I decided to settle for just blowing a kiss at the stone. I did, however, record the following snippet from an excited Irishman who had just kissed the stone. This should put you there. Okay, you kissed the Blarney Stone. I was too scared. Mm. We're high up. What was it like for you?
To be quite honest now, I thought, like, I've heard of the Blarney Stone down in my county, like, and I often heard them saying, like, kiss the Blarney Stone. I thought the Blarney Stone was actually on ground level.
Right.
Until I came to this old castle down in Blarney, I had to climb, I don't know, many steps up to this Blarney Stone, and then I had to lean back and put my head right way back, and it was I'd say it was the most nervousest thing I ever did in my life. I climbed Croke Patrick, I've done everything, but that was the most very experience.
Yeah, they had to hold your legs, right?
Had to hold my legs.
So you didn't fall through.
Didn't fall through.
Yeah. Thanks. No. Thank you. One of the things I love about Ireland is the variety of regional accents you encounter. I went to some live theater in Cork, and I only understood about half of it. From the way the audience was laughing, though, I'd have to say it was very funny. Evidently, the folks in Ireland just love shrink wrap radio. They can't get enough of it. Just listen to these enthusiastic and utterly spontaneous endorsements.
My name is Tony Regan from Borough County Offaly, and I'm on the
couch.
I'm on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Yep.
Dave.
Hi, my name is Kieran Ware from County Cork, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Do I put down you're on the couch or I'm on the couch? You're on the couch.
You're on the couch.
Hi, my name is Judy from County Cork, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave. Okay.
Go now.
Hello, my name is Catch Larkin from County Offaly. I come actually from Tullamore, and I'm on the coach with Declan Dave.
We're still in the midst of our GoDaddy promotion. If you use the special discount code of SHRINK3, you can buy your own .com domain name at GoDaddy.com for just $6.95. That's a $2 savings off the regular price. And I have other GoDaddy discounts for you, which you can find out about by going to ShrinkWrapRadio.com. If you look at the left-hand side of the shows page at ShrinkWrapRadio.com, you'll also see two other items there. One is a link to our Frapper map. Please put yourself on our new Frapper map, which is spelled F-R-A-P-P-R, which allows you to place a digital pushpin on the location where you live. You can get there from our site at shrinkwrapradio.com or by going directly to www.frapper.com/shrinkwrapradio. We're now up to 84 pins on the map. Yay! The whole point of the map is to see where you are, so please record not only your name, but where you're located. Gives me a thrill each time I discover a new pin on the map, and especially a new country. And our weblogs show that we now are up to over 1,900 of you who listened to the last podcast. So I'm looking for a lot more pins on that Frapper map. Plant those pins so I can see where you are. There are too many to read off since the last show, so I'll just mention the recent additions from outside the U.S. So a big shout goes out to the following international folks: Frank in England, Joe in Singapore. Joe has the distinction of being our first listener that I know about in Asia. If there are other Asian listeners, let me know. Also, I'm not aware of any listeners in Africa. Are you in Africa? If so, let me know. We also heard from Pedro in Spain, Richard in St. Catharines, Ontario, Alex in Brasov, Romania, Alan in Melbourne, Australia, Michelle in Paris, Delisid in, I'm sure I didn't say that name right, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Stephen in Brighton, England. Definitely want to talk to you, Stephen. Interesting things. And Katja in Marburg, Germany. So thanks a lot to you folks, and I want to see more of you on the Frapper map. I also want to call your attention to another feature on the left side of our show notes page at shrinkwrapradio.com, where you'll find a button that says Mobilize, and a company called Voice Indigo is offering this service at no cost to you or to us. And if you click on the Mobilize button, it will allow you to sign up to receive the latest edition of our show on your mobile phone. Is anybody interested in this? I don't know. I believe your phone has to support text messaging for this to work. I'd really be interested to hear about your experience with this, whether or not it worked, how well it worked. Do you want to be able to hear podcasts on your cell phone? I haven't heard from anyone about this feature yet. Well, while I'm still in my begging for feedback mode, this is probably a good place to solicit your input on today's opening intro music. If you're a regular listener, you probably noticed the opening jingle that replaced the usual piano intro. I commissioned musician extraordinaire Jeff Smith, who does a lot of wonderful work for a variety of podcasts, to create something for Shrink Wrap Radio, and this is what he came up with. If you don't remember it, you can scroll back and take another listen. You can also open up the beginning of an earlier show to compare that intro to this one. What do you think of this new intro? I'd really like to get your input.
Hi, this is Jonathan Van Nuys, and you're on the couch with my dad, Dr. Dave.
Thank you, son Jonathan. It's time to wrap up the show with a few of the many emails I received while I was gone, and then on to a piece of PodSafe music and a promo for the podcast Holistic Health Nation. First, a couple of emails. Dear Dr. Dave, I've been listening to your shows in the last couple of weeks and have become a huge fan. I just want to thank you for the inspiration you've given me. I'm living in Germany and am training to become a yoga instructor. I love your shows about altered states of consciousness, as you can imagine. I just finished my master's degree in sociology and economics, but I always wanted to learn more about psychology, but have never found a show or a book, come to think of it, that really covered the subjects I was interested in. Thanks to your show, I found great inspiration in the books of Joseph Campbell and will start to read about archetypes and intuition too. Well, that's about it. Keep up the good work and keep the show as personal as it is at the moment. I love that. And that's from Katja in Germany. Hey, Katja, thanks so much for the encouragement and for the encouragement in keeping it personal. You know, sometimes I wonder if, you know, if people are appreciating that part or not. So that was very encouraging feedback. And then here's another one from Israel. Hi, Dr. Dave. You make wonderful shows. I like also that you incorporate your children into your shows. Currently, I am in Israel. Before our son got cancer, I used to travel between Manhattan, Budapest, and Israel. I was born in Hungary, got married to an Israeli guy, and moved to Israel. After finishing my PhD in economics, I started to work in international research groups, traveled a lot. My husband helped me a lot, till our son got cancer. Nowadays, I maintain my scientific and artistic connection through the internet. She says, my expertise is in economics of technology, and within this field, from time to time, I work with models of organizational learning with regards to learning new technologies. Of course, the models I knew were behavioristic models. When our son got cancer, I started to learn more physiology. Actually, that was more psychology. After I learned a little, I started to help our son to handle his illness. Nowadays, I learn also shamanic and Indian healing methodologies from people who are working with these methods, and I'm using these methods helping our son. I hope I wrote enough about myself that can help you to know a little bit about one of your listeners. Take care, Cody. And Cody, thanks so much for that, for sharing that, and it is good to get to know my listeners. Okay, that's it for the mail. As I've mentioned in the past, your listener email and feedback is the fuel that this show runs on. You can write me at shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. My username on Skype is shrinkpod. I've even created a page on MySpace. And we have a call-in number where you can leave voicemail, and that number is 206-888-2746. People have also sent me a number of short encouragements via the Shrink Wrap Radio Frapper page. And oh, before I forget, I plan to put a link on the show notes to some of the pictures I took in Ireland, so be sure to look for that if you're at all curious. For our next show, I'm hoping to interview Dr. C. Norman Shealy, who is both an MD and a PhD, the author of 22 books, and he's one of the pioneers of the holistic health movement. I'm not sure of his schedule, though. If I don't have him next week, I'll have some other interesting guest, and I'll get him in the near future. Speaking of holistic health, right after our closing PodSafe music selection, stay tuned for the promo for Daryl Kulak's podcast called Holistic Health Nation. I particularly enjoyed his two shows on Qigong. Our appropriately Celtic PodSafe music selection is Wild Mountain Time by the Brobdingnagian Bards. You'll find a link to them in our show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com. In an earlier trip to Ireland, I was fortunate enough to hear Liam Clancy, the last remaining of the Clancy brothers, perform in a concert in Kilkenny. It was a very memorable experience for me. That's it for now. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
Heather. will all go together to pull wild mountain time. All around the blooming heather will ye go, lassie, will you go? Oh, the summertime is coming, and the trees are a-blooming, and the wild mountain thyme grows around the blooming heather. Will ye go, lassie, will ye go? And we'll all go together to the wild mountain thyme. All around the blooming heather, will ye go, lassie, will ye go? And we'll all go together to the wild mountain thyme. All around the blooming heather, will ye go, lassie, will ye go?
Hi, I'm Daryl Kulak, host of the new podcast, Holistic Health Nation, where we have interviews, news, and politics in the realm of alternative medicine, featuring therapies like naturopathy, acupuncture, yoga, qigong, reflexology, Nia, and Feldenkrais. We examine the trends in North American society towards these practices and uncover the politics for and against the holistic movement. We look at the great success stories, as well as the seamy underbelly of the world of healthcare. Go to holistichealthnation.com or subscribe in iTunes. Best of health to you.